Good evening. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder. Welcome to Mind Over Matter, a monthly K2 radio show that explores issues that are important to our hearts, our minds, as well as our bodies. During the past several Mind Over Matter programs, we focused on the interrelationship between our minds and our bodies. We focused on practices such as acupuncture, yoga, tai chi, and healing touch. We've looked at ways of healing and pursuing wellness that do not follow the traditional Western medical model or our common cultural beliefs. Tonight, I have invited Mary Pat Schilly to join our show. Mary Pat is a former speech therapist from Juneau who is now a practitioner of somatic education. Welcome to Mind Over Matter.
Thanks, Elaine. It feels really good to be here.
Yeah, well, great to have you here, Mary Pat. We're going to be talking about somatic education, and I don't think that many of our listeners know exactly what somatic education means. So could you give us a brief explanation before telling us how you became interested in this work?
Sure. Well, somatic education is an approach that involves slow, easy, gentle movements, somewhat similar to yoga, in that you are really taking time to think about the movements. And I think what sets it apart is that it focuses on an internal awareness of what's happening in the body. The word somatic comes from the root soma, which actually means body, but it's more body in the sense of what your internal proprioceptive experience is, not what you look like from another person's perspective or what you see in the mirror, but what you are actually feeling as you move through the movements. And then the education piece of that is that it's really designed to teach people how to work with their own bodies and getting past injuries, tightness, stress that plays a part on our muscles, and assists us in knowing what to do with our bodies as things occur.
Well, we'll go into a lot more detail about that during the show. You were a speech therapist. For how many years did you say?
Oh, I think 25.
In the Juneau School District?
Most of the time in the Juneau School District.
Okay. And is this a major leap to a whole different field? How did you get interested in somatic education?
Well, it is quite a leap. And at the same time, I think there are some similarities in, as we talk about it, I think it'll be evident how much of a brain movement connection there is. And that certainly happens in speech and language development, where there's a point at which everything is new and requires a lot of practice of some new kinds of techniques. And what has to be voluntarily initially in order to learn eventually becomes involuntary in the way you move and articulate your sounds. So there's definitely some similarities there. In terms of how I got interested in it, I just really just happened upon it many years ago, and I'm guessing maybe 15 years ago, there was a woman that came to Juneau periodically. Her name was Kamala. You might remember her. And I had heard about her classes, and she was teaching classes in somatics at that time, and attended a class of hers, and it was just this, it felt life-changing at the time. It just so resonated for me.
Really?
And I just remember leaving and telling someone that, you know, I'm just going to follow this woman anywhere. I mean, it was just so perfect in terms of her opening up this door for me about how to think about my body and how I move. And, of course, I didn't follow her, but it really planted a seed for me that stuck with me for several years until I actually then pursued getting training in that area.
So how does one get training or get certified?
Well, there is an institute in Novato, California. It's the Hanno Somatic Education Novada Institute. And it's a 3-year program, but you go down for intensive classes for 10-day periods just twice a year. So over 6 periods, you get the training. And the idea is that the time in between those 6-month contacts is you're doing lots of practicums and documenting and getting hands on bodies and teaching classes and getting experience.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Are there many somatic practitioners? I mean, are there any others in Juneau or in the Pacific Northwest?
There aren't any others in Juneau. I have heard that there's one in Anchorage, or at least she's in the training program, I should say.
Okay.
And there are many, I think it's fair to say many in California, and quite a few in the Pacific Northwest.
Right. Well, the training center is in on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So let's go into more detail now.
Okay.
I read up on somatic education a little bit, and I was struck by a term, sensory motor amnesia.
Uh-huh.
Maybe we could start there. Tell us.
Sure.
What is that?
It's kind of what this whole philosophy of education revolves around. Thomas Hanna, who was the creator and guru of somatic education, was neurophysiologist. He did a lot of movement education. He was very into physiology and philosophy. A very intelligent, learned person. And in his exploration around the brain and how the body moves, he detected over time that what the issue is so much about what happens with our bodies over time as a result of injuries, accidents, stress, repetitive movement, is that our muscles become stiff, irresponsive, painful over time as a result of this lack of brain-muscle connection. And I think something that he really points out that feels like it's so simple that it's almost feels ridiculous to bring it up, but I think we lose sight of the fact that our brains are responsible for moving our muscles.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to have a sore muscle and we think it's all happening right there in that shoulder or in that calf or in that bicep. And actually, the muscle movement is totally dependent on the message that it gets from the brain. And so in looking at that brain-muscle connection, he feels that through all of these different kinds of life experience, that something's happened, that the brain is no longer getting feedback from the muscles. And so it's kind of going into this motor amnesia phase of not letting the muscle move. Because it's not getting sensory feedback, then it doesn't know that this muscle used to have a much wider range.
You mean if you've got a muscle that's like constantly tight?
If you've got a muscle that's constantly tight, and I think a really great example of that is to think about all the time that we spend in front of our computers. And you think about the posturing that happens, and it's our brain's way of accommodating us so that we can sit in front of the computer. And typically, it's, if you can imagine that, I think most of us can, hunched over shoulders.
Yep.
And if you're looking at a laptop, for instance, your chin kind of juts forward. You have your arms bent at your elbows, and so your forearms and biceps are really tight.
Yeah.
To maintain that position. Your wrists are totally immobile as you're working away with your fingers, which is a reason why there's a lot of carpal tunnel associated with working on a computer for hours on end. And, you know, you're shifting your whole head and posture so that you can see the screen. And so if we're doing that for hours on end, day after day, our muscles, that becomes the norm. And so because you're not extending your arm on a regular basis, for instance, your brain isn't getting that message of this whole nice range of motion.
Ah.
And so it starts to think that that shortened muscle contraction is the norm. And so it's like an amnesia. It
forgets.
Well, that's
interesting, because I normally think of if I wasn't using my full range of motion, of movement, and I do go to yoga to make sure as I'm aging that
right.
I keep that full range. I do. I think of it, the intelligence of that or the knowledge is in the muscle. But it's in the brain.
It's in the brain, but your muscles are giving it that information. It's like this loop. You think about, you know, if you were to walk up to the stove and it was on and you started to put your finger towards the burner and you detected the heat, that you'd pull back, and the reason you're pulling back so reflexively is that you feel the heat and you're sending this message to the brain, and the brain is coming back and allowing your finger to pull back. So it's this whole loop that is so instantaneous typically, and that's what's happening with every movement that we make. Every movement in our body happens as a result of a message that it's gotten from the brain. So if you intercept that loop somehow by not feeling that full range, your brain's going to start responding to what kind of messages it gets.
Well, that makes total sense.
It really does.
Well, also just like learning a dance routine.
Mm-hmm.
Learning to ride a bicycle is a good one. But learning a dance routine, obviously the memory of that dance routine is not in the muscle. I mean, it could be, we call it body memory. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I've heard people, because recently I took Tai Chi, obviously it's not all here. It's sort of a combination of the two, isn't
it?
It's a different kind of memory. If I work too hard on trying to remember the form, I get all balled up.
Right.
But if I kind of let it flow, because I know if I work too hard, what I'm probably doing is trying to think of two things at the same time.
Right.
Okay.
And, you know, the way the brain works is that the cortex is like the motor of our brain, and that's where we learn material of any kind. So you think about learning to ride a bike. Most of us can relate to that, and you always hear that saying, oh, don't worry about it. It's like, it'll come back to you. It's like riding a bike.
Yes.
And there's a lot of truth to that. And what happens when we learn to ride a bike, initially, all the brain activity is happening in this motor control center, in the cortex. And so you think about learning to ride a bike, you're holding the bike and you start to roll the bike and then you gradually lift one foot up and then you start to try to get a balance and then you put the other foot up and you may or may not make some headway. Chances are you're going to fall at some point. So you start over again and you're so consciously, so voluntarily doing every part of that. You're pushing the bike, you're lifting one foot, you're getting your balance, you're picking up the other foot. And so during this phase of practicing and practicing and practicing, it's all right there in that main motor cortex. But there's a point at which you get it. If you stick with it long enough, you get it. And your brain, the cortex of your brain, is saying, got it. And so it moves it down to the subcortex, which is an involuntary part of the brain. It's how we learn to eat with a spoon. It's how we do any number of things that eventually become automatic. It would take so much energy and focus if we didn't have those automatic things in our life.
Well, like
walking
speaking
down
a language.
Street. Yeah, speaking a language.
You practice and practice.
Exactly.
At first it's artificial.
Right.
And then gradually
It becomes part of you.
It's seemingly spontaneous,
exactly,
as we're speaking now.
Exactly. And you can use that same kind of example to think about when you're sitting in front of that computer, and it's like practicing. You've practiced holding your arms in place tight like that. You've practiced jutting your chin forward to see the screen. You've practiced tightening your shoulders.
Repetition.
So you don't have to think about it anymore. Now it's down in the subcortex. It's involuntary. And so the idea of somatics is to relearn what you've forgotten.
It's so reprogram.
In there. Reprogramming.
Oh.
Starting
over. So
and so that notion of soft, simple, gentle movements, but with this totally internal awareness, is like kicking that movement back up to the cortex so you can remind it of what it used to know. And that can become the norm again after practice.
Well, why do we develop these ingrained patterns? I understand the computer part. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I'm talking about the patterns that hurt us, that create pain.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a really good question. Thomas Hanna would say that we develop one of three different reflex patterns over time, and typically they are, like I said earlier, either the result of some kind of trauma, an accident, an injury, or repetitive movement like we're talking about with the computer, or stress. You know, every movement in our body or every kind of stress reaction we have, whether it's emotional stress or physical stress or whatever, shows up somehow in the musculature of our body. And so he felt like all of these different kinds of life experience follow into a category of one of these reflexes. And he referred to them as the green light reflex, the red light reflex, and the trauma reflex. And depending on the situation, our bodies naturally tend to go into one of those reflexes. And so an example of that, of each of those, is that in the green light reflex, it's a reflex of action. And if I were to describe it, I would describe it as shoulders back, lower back is arched more than it really needs to be, this really upright, perfect, what we think of as perfect posture kind of scenario, kind of a soldier standing at attention.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a response that we make anytime we're responding to action, whether the doorbell rings or our alarm clock goes off or somebody says, pay attention. Any of those things where, without even noticing, we respond with that kind of reaction to some degree. And it's really appropriate and really useful. And if that's what we're doing time and time and time again, we can get stuck in that pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a very appropriate and needed capacity to it. You know, we do it, it starts. It's actually the Landau reflex, which for people that know about human development and physical development, happens at 6 months when a baby for the first time lifts its head and looks around. You know, it's that shoulders back, lower arch in the back happening, and it's incredibly useful and necessary to our physical development and continues to be throughout our lifetime, but if too exaggerated and too repetitive, it gets in the way of a nice flowing kind of movement. It's a stuck sensory motor
and
amnesia.
And what would cause that?
Oh, I think just constantly feeling like you're responding to all the different things that you need to respond to in life. You know, constantly being on the go and going here, going there, having to react to things. Needing to be on the spot, and it's just
so it could be psychological and environmental, and
very
a combination
much so.
Of the two,
because
it would be how you view your environment. So even somebody with a normal, busy life. You
right.
know, because everybody doesn't necessarily have muscular tension that's so severe that it's painful.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think there you really get into the mind stuff, because with stress, it's not just what's going on in your life. It's how you perceive what's going on.
Exactly. It's not the stress itself. It's what you do with it.
Yeah.
And so then the second reflex pattern, is this okay to go into each of these?
Absolutely.
The second one is the red light reflex, and it's really quite the opposite of the green light reflex. Whereas the green light is action, the red light is more apprehension and fear, or just an anticipation of something that at some deeper level you feel like you need to protect yourself. And it's a slumping forward, very curled forward, and the abdominals contract, and certain parts of the, on all of these patterns from head to toe, there are different muscle reflexes that are happening. But this one is very much about a curling forward kind of movement. And one really pronounced aspect of that reflex pattern is really contracted abdominals. And so if you can try that on right now as you're thinking about it, you can really feel that curling forward and your abs contract and pull your diaphragm down. And so it really affects blood flow, and the diaphragm is really stifled, so you don't get these nice full breaths, and so you're not getting as much oxygen to the brain, and it goes on and on. But it's a very forward movement kind of reflex. And there again, if you're doing something to that effect, and you know, that one goes back to the computer too, it's not necessarily a response to fear in that situation,
mm-hmm.
but it is a repetitive response that is bringing our bodies forward,
mm-hmm.
and often has a lot of impact on neck and shoulders and spine. So yet another pattern.
Factory workers, whether they were historically in America or today probably in Asia, would be suffering so much
yes.
from this repetitive, you know, hunching or standing straight,
right.
Depending on their job, which is so repetitive.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay, so the second one is?
So the second one was red light.
Red light.
And the third is the trauma reflex. And whereas the green deals more with the back of the body, and the red deals more with the musculature of the front of the body, the trauma reflex is the sides of the body, and particularly waist muscles. And it often is the result of a trauma, and that too can be a repetitive movement of sorts. But it happens a lot when there's some kind of violent, sudden trauma, like in a car accident, for instance, or falling off a bike or whatever, and the body moves to accommodate and protect itself. And so it tends to be this contraction in the side of the body. And sometimes that can be a result of surgery where the body is trying to protect itself in the healing process.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, it's like practice, practice, practice. You're in that position for so long that it becomes the norm.
Right. And with trauma, that's mm-hmm. an area that I focused on quite a bit in my mm-hmm. psychotherapy practice. I could almost feel when someone came in the office, who particularly because this was, I specialized in childhood sexual abuse, working with adults who had experienced childhood mm-hmm. sexual abuse, and there was hesitation. Definitely, usually the speech was quieter,
mm-hmm.
More fearful. When you've been in practice and working with people, what did you notice about childhood abuse trauma survivors? Did you see any particular syndromes?
It's not a, not that that wasn't a part of it, but in my practice in somatic education, you don't intentionally delve into that at all with people in terms of their experience or history. The interesting thing is, and this is probably something that you've seen over time in your practice, the interesting thing is that, you know, we so often separate what we're doing with our muscles and physical and how we're feeling about things and just what our emotions are around something. But when you break a pattern up in your body, in your muscles and motor movement, it often allows other things to surface.
Absolutely.
So I think it's inevitable that when you're working with someone with releasing muscles,
yes,
that are often contracted to begin with because of some kind of trauma,
yes,
that you are going to see these releases.
Yeah.
And so there are emotional releases. It's not a practice or a philosophy where you delve into that, but
yes,
you certainly let it happen as it happens.
I can certainly see that. And Mary Pat, this is a great time to take a short break with some good music chosen by my technical, wonderful technical assistants, John and Dolly Kremers. And then after the music, Mary Pat Chilly and I will be back to talk more about somatics. Welcome back to Mind Over Matter. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder, and with me in the studio tonight is Mary Pat Shilley, a Junoite and a practitioner of somatic education, which is a process for hopefully relieving chronic pain and the impact of stress on our bodies. And we've been talking about how our bodies react to stress and how we might develop chronic muscular tension. So, Mary Pat, we've been talking about the process of how the body gets set in patterns that may not be of benefit to it. Because, I mean, so many people have back pain, shoulder pain, neck pain. It's keeping physical therapists and massage therapists in business. So what are the, I guess I'll call them strategies, that somatic education uses to retrain these movements, retrain the mind?
Well, there are two different approaches to somatic education, and one is one-on-one sessions, where as a somatic educator, you're actually working with someone either on a massage table, on a mat on the floor, but some place where the client can relax and you're actually helping move them through different movement patterns in an attempt to help retrain their brain. And so part of it is providing resistance as they move against you so that the brain has to really wake up to that movement. And something that's such an essential part of understanding this whole kind of form of brain training is that it's a lot about muscle contraction, but where we really learn is in the release phase of that contraction. So in both the one-on-one work and then in the other aspect of somatic education, which is in a class format like yoga or Tai Chi, you are really working on techniques to help people become more aware of where they're contracting their muscles, but more importantly, using some techniques of how to release that. Our brains are really good at contracting. Where they lose sight and where the amnesia develops is in the actual release. And it's in the release where we lengthen and increase our range of motion in the muscles. That's the important piece that we're getting at. So it's twofold. It can be one-on-one work or as part of a class. If you walked into a class, you would suspect that it was yoga probably because it looks so similar, and yet it has really different focus.
Could you give me an example of one particular exercise or form, one movement sequence that would be classic in somatics?
It all revolves around the term pandiculation, and every movement that happens in somatics is focused on one of those three reflex patterns, and working with this whole notion of pandiculation. And that's simply a technique that Thomas Hanna developed to
work
through.
Did he make up the word?
No, he didn't make up the word, because it's actually, that's a good question, it's actually something that animals do. Like if you think about, I'm glad you asked that. If you think about a dog or a cat waking up in the morning, they do this kind of full body stretch where they're just elongating all their muscles. It's just kind of this wonderful morning release. I mean, think about how much you love stretching in the morning. You know, that full body wake up stretch. But you don't just extend your muscles and then just stop. It's this elongated contraction that gradually releases. And that's kind of the idea behind pandiculation. Our bodies have these patterns of contraction. So in a contraction, you're tightening the muscle. And so you want to wake up the brain because it's in this habitual contraction. So what you do, the pandiculation part is threefold in that you go ahead and do what the body knows how to do. You go to that muscle and contract it even more, really exaggerated contraction. So the brain's going, oh, okay, I'm paying attention now. You're contracting it as much as you can. And then you're releasing the contraction, but you're doing it so slowly that you're maintaining the contraction. And so the brain's noticing the contraction, but now you've got all this time on the release that the brain is relearning about releasing the muscle. And so you just release it. That's the second part, really slowly. It's really like a slow motion kind of movement and giving your brain lots of good feedback in the meantime. And then the third phase is to just totally relax it.
So no earbuds in. No listening to.
This is
about really inner focus.
Yeah.
So much like Tai Chi in that respect.
So much like Tai Chi in that respect. It's this, you're totally aware of every movement. You know, when you think about Tai Chi, it's a great comparison because you are just perfecting every movement, and it is this graceful, slow motion, beautiful kind of movement. And somatics is very much like that. You're putting everything into slow motion mode, and it allows your brain to notice every aspect of that. And so in noticing, you're bringing it back up to that motor control center, that cortex of your brain. And by just paying attention from this really internal perspective, what we were talking about, that proprioceptive, really tuning in. Typically, I have students close their eyes so that they can just totally be aware of every inch of movement. And also, I think it allows people to not compare what they're doing with the people on the floor next to them. And allows them to just really fully get into that. It's kind of a meditation in movement because you're so internally focused.
I have had the feeling that I personally have a lack of talent in inner awareness of my body. That came up recently. In my Pilates class, my Pilates instructor would say, "Where are you feeling the burn? Where are you feeling the work?" And I just I'd be working hard, but I couldn't identify what part of my body was feeling that. Mm-hmm. And I've had other instances where I haven't noticed. I feel like I'm all in my head. Are some people better at that inner awareness? They're more in tune with their body.
I think that some people definitely are, and it's often a result of what they do in their lives, if they are doing some kind of practice where they're really tuning in. And it's also related to how much of that sensory motor amnesia we have. It's really interesting at times to be working with someone, and this is something I notice a lot when I'm doing the one-on-one sessions, that you'll ask someone to do something and you can tell that their brain can just not process what it is you're asking.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll come back and maybe give them some kind of a little bit of resistance somewhere and then ask them to do it again. And several times later, it's this aha, oh, that's what you want me to do. It's not that they're muscle wasn't capable of making the move. They just couldn't make that brain-to-muscle movement. And it goes back to that amnesia piece, that something's just asleep. It's forgotten how to move.
When I was teaching mindfulness-based stress reduction at the hospital at Bartlett, part of the 8-week program is what is called a body scan.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember the first few times when I was in training with mindfulness-based stress reduction of doing the body scan myself. And I remember almost being tickled with, wow, that's what my foot feels like.
I had never just focused on that tingly sensation. I certainly know what pain feels like, but I had never really enjoyed the sense of a pain-free body, just lying there and just feeling almost the corpuscles. I mean, just feeling one part of my body at a time and its aliveness.
Yes, and it's a really essential part. I'm really glad you brought that up about the body scan. It's a really essential part of the classes that are taught in somatic education. The idea, I guess if you were going to narrow it down to two things that somatic education is all about, one is awareness, and then the other is developing techniques, once you're aware, to develop techniques of how to control your muscle movements. And the big piece of the classes that includes that awareness is the body scan.
Oh, you do the body scan.
Yeah, I always start my classes with a body scan. And what's so lovely about that, it allows everyone to just stop, for one thing. And these classes are, for the most part, almost all of the techniques and processes that we go through are done on the floor. And so the reasoning behind that is that we have these patterns, and the moment you let go of gravity, you automatically move into whatever your pattern is. And it could be one of those three, or it could be a combination of all of the above. Oh. And so by laying on the floor, you're actually totally giving into gravity. And so you're not naturally moving into those patterns that you typically use. And so as you're moving through the exercises, if you're not fighting against gravity and not resorting to your patterns, your brain is much more conducive to practicing new ways of moving. Mm-hmm. And the exercises, so the body scan is a really essential part. I always take plenty of time for that, from head to toe, and just helping people tune in to how their body is positioned on the floor and how it's weighted and how one side compares to the other and where their body touches the floor and where are the gaps, and particularly with the spine. You know, we often think of our spine as our back, when in fact it starts at the base of the skull and moves all the way down to our tailbone. So really tuning into that fact and noticing where the spine is in touch with the floor and where it's not, and the tightness around the muscles of the spine, and comparing the two sides of the bodies and the limbs. And it's just so informative.
Do you feel with practice, as people do body scans over and over again, that they even go deeper and deeper into what they are tuned
into? I think definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they can get there a lot quicker, for one thing.
They
can let go a lot faster. Over time, you start to become more aware of the tension that you're holding. And you can start releasing it.
Yeah.
Just through the body scan.
Yes.
It can start to happen.
Yes, because it's all about not paying attention.
Right.
And then you're training your mind into awareness, which is paying attention, which is a quality, shall we say, or a talent that you train yourself to do.
Right. Yeah.
And of course, with digital technology and being on screens, lots of research has shown that that's teaching our minds to not pay attention.
Right.
Because things are moving so rapidly that you are just jumping from one thing to another.
Right.
I mean, most of us have had the experience of going to read a newspaper article, but then there's all these other things that you could click on, and before you know it, hours have gone by, and you are totally not paying attention. Also, one of my meditation teachers had us do a version of the body scan before, as a way to settle our minds at the very beginning of our meditation period. Again, developing awareness and the ability to keep the mind on the chosen point.
Uh-huh.
And that would also be, you know, I would imagine that a somatics class, just like yoga and Tai Chi, as long as you're continuing to pay attention,
right.
You're not on automatic pilot thinking about what you're cooking for dinner.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You are totally focused in the somatics class on that muscle release.
Right. And it's so similar to meditation in that you're asking folks to just keep coming back. You know, when you start
coming
wandering
back to the focus.
And
yeah.
Getting close to
yeah.
the end of the class and you're starting
yeah.
about your grocery list
yeah.
or getting back to work or whatever is happening, just give yourself permission to just be here and just keep coming back. And
I have a confession
yeah.
to make.
Uh-huh.
Years and years ago, and could it have been 30 years ago, when Kamala was living here part of the time, 20
maybe,
years ago,
maybe.
I took one somatics class and I never went back.
Really?
And I think the reason is, you'll love this, it was too slow.
Oh,
yes. So it kind of drove me crazy.
Yes, I think that is really an issue for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, I tend to not get a lot of young people in my classes for that reason. I think it's often hard for people to imagine that something that's that slow can really be that helpful.
Yeah, the more speeded up we
yeah.
are, actually, ironically, of course, the more speeded up we are, the more we need to slow down.
Exactly. And you know, Elaine, there's another aspect of somatic education that I haven't addressed at all, and that is that it is this incredible complement to other physical activities. Because typically when we get into really passionate about a physical activity, whether it's biking or skiing or whatever, it's a lot of repetition of the same thing. And so your body doesn't have an opportunity in a lot of those things to really expand your muscles in lots of different ways. It gets really efficient at what it does. But there's also danger in that of forfeiting other really good activity, other really good muscle movements as a result of this intense focus on one or two particular sports or physical activities.
Let's get into that in a moment. I'd like to talk about exercise versus movement.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Let's take a short break again. And John and Dolly are going to play some music. And we will be back shortly to talk more about somatics.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Mind Over Matter. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder, and Mary Pat Schilly is with me in the studio tonight, and she is a practitioner of somatic education, which is a process for relieving chronic pain caused by the impact of stress on our bodies. And we've just been talking about the kinds of movements, when done on a consistent basis, that can release muscular tightness that could be causing pain. And we also just mentioned exercise.
Yeah, and I think the piece that's important to be aware of with somatics and other forms of exercise is that somatics can really help enhance other activities, you know, whether it's a biking or skiing. You can become more efficient at what you do because your muscles are not so tight. They're lengthened, they're relaxed, they're moving with your body in a way that your body's designed to move rather than getting stuck in particular patterns. So it's a really good complement to absolutely any other activity.
One thing I noticed that in reading a bit about Dr. Hanna is that he liked to talk about debunking the myth of aging.
Uh-huh.
What was that about?
Well, he really felt that the whole notion of aging is a myth. I mean, you think about when we think about an elderly person, you think about them being very hunched over and having a certain posture.
Yes.
That is typical of an old person. And you often do see that in old age, but Thomas Hanna was trying to point out over time that it isn't a necessity of life to be in that condition, that it's life experience that results in that. It's not the aging process in and of itself. So that even at 80, if you tended to have that, what he considered and labeled a senile posture, even at 80, you could undo that and relearn what your body has developed over time. So it's not age itself that results in that.
For any of our listeners who are attracted to learning more about this technique, you've loaned me a book, Move Without Pain by Martha Peterson.
Uh-huh.
And if I were to engage, could somebody just use this book and follow the directions, or must you take a class or see a somatics practitioner?
I think it's really helpful to take a class or see a somatics practitioner, and if that isn't a possibility, I think the book is really helpful. I really like Martha Peterson's work. I can really relate to it. We were trained in the same way and at the same place. And so I find her very accessible. She has that book that you're mentioning called Move Without Pain. And she also has various CDs that focus on different kind of posturings and reflex patterns. And she actually has a website and a blog, if anybody, just out of curiosity, it's really worth checking out. And I don't know exactly what her website is. I should have come prepared for that. But you could just Google.
I'm sure you just find it.
Yeah,
Martha Peterson.
Just Google Martha Peterson, and
somatics.
Her company is called Essential Somatics. So either one of those will get you
Well,
there.
Here's a quote from her book. I thought this was cute. Warning: before beginning a program of physical inactivity, consult your doctors. Your doctor. Sedentary living is abnormal and dangerous to your health.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
<it.
laughs> And again, the name of the book was Move Without Pain by Martha Peterson.
Yes.
And do you think that somebody could choose amongst these? She has many well-illustrated, I'll call them exercises, but movements in the book that you could pick and choose amongst them.
I think so. You know, I think it depends on what kind of learner you are. Some people it really works for them to look at pictures in a book and read about it. She has great explanations about somatics and the the why and how of it, and wonderful movement patterns, and really well illustrated if you tend to be a person that can look at illustrations and make sense of that. That works really well for a lot of people. Some people prefer to have a video, and she also sells videos that include everything that's in her book that I would really recommend too.
And I take it you're not teaching a class right now?
I'm not teaching right now. I tend to teach in series, like 6 to 8 week series, and there isn't a class happening right now. I typically teach at Rainforest Yoga or the Juno Family Health and Birth Center are the two places that I usually land to teach my classes. And I've also taught at the Juno Racquet Club, but no classes scheduled right now. So,
okay.
Stay tuned, though.
Okay. Well, Mary Pat, it's time to wind up, unfortunately, because there's several other questions I wanted to ask you. But I want to thank you for sharing your experience and knowledge about somatic education and explaining how our bodies respond to stress. And I'd like to thank the Kremers, John and Dolly, who are sitting here tonight's technicians who have supported me and this radio show for as long as I can remember. So good night to all our Southeast Alaska listeners. Please tune in on another Monday next month at 7 p.m. to K2 for another edition of Mind Over Matter. So take care of your bodies and have a good evening. Good night.